WFYI podcast brought to you by Bloomington, Indiana, an American college town offering food and drink, college sports, outdoor activities, live music, cool art, and good times daily. Everyone is welcome in Bloomington. More information at visitbloomington.com.
We're going to take a trip right now. Like we always do about this time.
This is a journey into sound. Break it
down. I'm Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. On this week's show, I'll be speaking with the composer, vocalist, and multi-instrumentalist, Emily Wells. Emily was born in Texas, but she grew up largely in Indianapolis. We'll be discussing her time in Indiana and listening to tracks from her new album, Regards to the End. Regards to the End looks back at the AIDS crisis of the 1980s and questions how we can apply the lessons learned from the AIDS crisis to climate crisis. We'll hear a song from Regards to the End now. This is Emily Wells with Love Saves the Day.
All of my acres, so I'm
That was Emily Wells with Love Saves the Day off her new album, Regards to the End. And Emily Wells is my guest this week. Let's join our conversation. Emily, thank you so much for taking time to speak with me today.
My pleasure. Thank you, Kyle.
Yeah, and you have a powerful new album coming out titled Regards to the End. And we're going to listen to some music from that record later in the program. But first, I wanted to talk to you a bit about your background here in Indianapolis. You essentially grew up here, and it was in Indianapolis that you started sharing your music with the world. And I believe you came here around 9 years old. I'm curious what brought your family to Indianapolis.
Sure. Yeah, your timeline is spot on. My dad was a music minister at the time, and so he got a job with a church in Indianapolis. And, you know, we moved from Texas, so it was a big culture shock. But, you know, I think such is the nature with, you know, preachers' kids are kind of like army brats, you know, it's like we move around a lot. There's sort of a lack of roots can happen. So
you said it was a culture shock. Was that the climate, the social culture here, or everything?
Yeah, all of it. I mean, definitely the climate was a big shift, but, you know, Texans are really specific. And so I guess it was just like a kind of a new way of, plus I was a kid. So I was leaving what I had, the only thing I'd ever known, you know? So, we adjusted though, you know?
Yeah. And Emily, as I mentioned, it was during your time in Indianapolis that you started sharing your music publicly. You were a teenager at that time, attending Pike High School. And I grew up in Indianapolis roughly around the same time you did. And aside from a few coffee shops or all ages punk venues, I remember there were very few places for teenagers to see live music or to perform their music at that time. That was really frustrating for me as a teenager who loved music. I'm curious if that made things difficult for you as a teenager trying to make something happen with their music.
Yeah, you know, as teenagers, we're so inventive and scrappy. I felt like I didn't know that I was missing that, I guess, in certain ways, and would go to like DIY venues or definitely played in some coffee shops. I threw shows at my house sometimes. You know, it was just like kind of making the best out of it. It wasn't until I moved to New York that I realized how much I was missing out on. But, you know, I think cool little scenes can really sprout up. And they're ephemeral by nature, but important to the people who are part of them, you know?
Do you remember any of the specific DIY venues or coffee shops you were frequenting at that time? Or is that too far in the past?
Cornerstone Coffee, I remember. I worked there too. So, you know, I'd like barista by day and play my songs by night. That one's in Broad Ripple. There was one called Lulu's Electric Cafe, which also I worked at and played at, and was subsequently fired from. So, you know, but yeah, that's about all I can remember. I don't remember any of the DIY spaces because they were completely just like, you know, in some weird rec room of some, you know, willing establishment for a night or two, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Very transient. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Emily, I remember you making a huge impact with your music here as a teenager. I believe you were featured on the cover of Nouveau News Weekly at one point, and you were profiled in the Indianapolis Star, which is always a big deal here in Indiana.
Yeah.
I mean, this probably seems really small now compared to everything you've accomplished, but that must have been very meaningful for you at the time. Tell me about that, getting all this attention for your music here in Indianapolis as a teenager.
Yeah, you know, it was very surprising. It was so obviously incredibly encouraging because you know, you're just a kid making songs and trying to let your imagination be your guide, you know. And then having adults notice that, it's a big deal at when you're 14, or I think I was 16 when I was on the cover of Nouveau. I think just kind of made things seem more possible, if that makes sense.
My guest this week is Emily Wells. Let's pause and listen to a song from her 2012 release, Mama. This is Emily Wells with Mama's Gonna Give You Love. I'm Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. That was Emily Wells with Mama's Gonna Give You Love, off her 2012 album, Mama. And Emily Wells is my guest this week. We've been discussing her time growing up in Indianapolis. Let's return to our conversation. And Emily, there's one aspect of your time in Indianapolis that I really wanted to ask you about. The Chatterbox is one of my favorite music venues in Indianapolis, and it's celebrating its 40th anniversary in 2022. You know, a very important music venue here in the city. I understand that as a teenager, you used to sneak into the Chatterbox, and this was really a formative experience in your life. Tell me about sneaking into the Chatterbox and what it meant to you to see music there.
Sure. Oh, yeah. I mean, talk about making things feel more possible. That place just like cracked open the world to me. You know, I had grown up playing classical music. I had, like I said, my dad was a music minister. So it was either like Brahms or Haydn or, you know, hymns. You know, it was very, or Vivaldi, of course, because I'm a violinist. So jazz was completely foreign to me. It was the most exciting thing I had ever encountered, you know, and also live music in that way. You know, I, of course, had participated in a lot of people making music together in a room through choirs and orchestras, but this felt utterly, utterly fresh. And I remember it was like a, you know, a siren song kind of situation for me. I was, as teenagers do, just sort of wandering around looking for something to spark me. An evening I was downtown and totally on my own. And I heard this music and just was so drawn to it. And I was just watching outside the window. And there was this old guy playing bass. His name was Max. I have a feeling he's not with us anymore, but he kind of motioned for me to come in. Once he noticed me there. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go in and they can just card me. As soon as they card me, I'm going to get as many minutes or seconds as I can in this place, you know? And Denise, I think is her name, came over and said, can I get you something to drink? And maybe it was like a test because I ordered coffee. I didn't order booze, you know? And I think she kind of just understood I was there for the music. And it wasn't until Nouveau blew my cover that I had to stop going.
How often were you checking out shows there up till that point?
Well, I had this great little trick, which was that I was fulfilling my high school credits by attending IUPUI, kind of like this college high school, I don't know. It was a way for kids who couldn't stand going to high school to graduate and continue their education early. And so I was down there like twice a week. So I would go at least once a week to hear music there.
You mentioned the bass player, Max. Do you remember any of the musicians you saw, or did you form any meaningful connections with any of the musicians you were watching there?
I always, Max, for sure. I don't remember the names of anybody else, but there was a trio that he was part of. And there was a drummer, older gentleman.
Had to be Dick Dickinson, an older white guy with glasses. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. That's the one. But yeah, Max was so encouraging and welcoming. He had a kind of Santa Claus, you know, a jazz Santa Claus look about him. But yeah, he was wonderful.
Let's pause and listen to another track from Emily Wells off her 2008 album, The Symphonies. This is In the Barrel of a Gun.
Yeah.
That was Emily Wells with In the Barrel of a Gun off her 2008 album, The Symphonies. And Emily Wells is my guest this week. Let's return to our conversation. Emily, I think it was around the year 2000 that you left Indianapolis. I know this isn't the greatest place in the world to launch a music career, and you were also coming out, I think, at that time as well, and Indianapolis is not known for its hospitality towards gay, lesbian, trans, queer people. Tell me about your decision to leave Indianapolis, and was that kind of an easy decision for you at that time?
Yeah, it was a natural decision, I guess. I was flirting with a big label in New York, and there was just a lot of opportunity, you know? So, and it was, all of it was in New York or Los Angeles. So I just kind of tried to follow my instincts. And, you know, I missed my parents, but they understood. There was no chance that I was not going to be a wanderer, you know?
Yeah, and I believe your current manager lives here in Indianapolis, and I think your father may still be here in Indiana. Do you have significant ties still to Indianapolis, and is this a place that, you know, holds any special meaning for you?
My dad is in Lafayette, so I do come visit, and my manager is there as well, which is just purely by coincidence it makes me smile, and there's a kind of full circle comfort in that fact, you know. And so much cool stuff has happened in Indiana, you know, Bloomington and Indianapolis. I feel like, you know, good things are happening there. I might've been wise to stay, who knows? But the Chatterbox truly is the beating heart of Indianapolis for me, especially with my parents no longer living in the city. And so many of the people I knew then aren't there anymore.
I understand if you don't have an answer for this, but is there a song from your catalog that speaks at all to your time here in Indiana that you would want to share?
Oh, boy. I mean, I don't know that I have an answer for that. Like,
that's,
you know,
okay.
It's,
yeah.
I can hardly remember that. It's like such another lifetime, you know, in terms of the music I was writing at that time. It's so, so formative. And I'm sure there are glimpses of it in things I write even today. But it's almost like trying to recall a dream or something, you know? Mm.
I know you were putting out tapes while you were in high school. Is that stuff still floating around on the internet in any way? And how do you feel about that music you made during that time?
You know, I haven't listened to that music in a long time. I feel sort of sweetly about it. Mm. And I hope that if anyone listens to it, they take it in its context, you know? Mm.
I am reflections, babe, and I am my own creation, and I am a lot of things you never knew, you never knew. I am that awkward moment, and I am you passing by. I am the thought of raindrops you say in my eyes. Friend from another world, you are lightning at midnight. My soul mingles with yours a little more each time. I smile the thought of you on my selfie and styrofoam coffee in the porch light. Wanna paint with my words, wanna paint with my song. Just wish I could capture you. Again the stars are out for you, and I hear another road trip, hear another road trip over on our highway.
And Emily, you've embraced a lot of different forms of expression and styles of music in your work as an artist. And I want to ask you about one of those musical styles now and how this genre has influenced what you do. You know, I was reading your bio and it described your music as a bridge between pop and chamber music. And at various points in your work, hip-hop music has also been a very significant part of what you do. And I know you've collaborated with Questlove and Dan the Automator and, you know, other figures in the world of hip-hop music. And your your 2008 album, The Symphonies, is a great example of how you've bridged all these different influences together. Can you tell us anything about the role of hip-hop music in your life and work? And I know it may not be as prevalent in the music you're making today, but for a while it seemed to hold a pretty big place in what you were doing.
Sure, yeah, I mean, huge influence. I'm a child of Biggie Smalls and Tupac and Outkast, and I feel like I got to be a teenager when like really good rap and hip-hop was just so fresh. And in the same way, you know, it is our culture, and it influences culture and music in really incredible ways. And I don't think of myself in terms of that genre, because I certainly don't consider myself a hip-hop artist, but I do appreciate its influence in terms of melding and sampling and just telling stories, you know.
I'm Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. My guest this week is the composer, vocalist, and multi-instrumentalist Emily Wells. We've been discussing the role of hip-hop in her music, and in 2009, Wells released a unique cover of the Notorious B.I.G. classic, Juicy. Let's listen.
It was all a dream. I used to read Word Up magazine. Salt and pepper, heavy tea up in the limousine. Hanging pictures on my wall. Every Saturday, rap attack, Mr. Magic Molly Mar. I let my tape rock to my tape pop. Smoking weed and bamboo, sipping on private stock. Way back when I had a red and black lumberjack with the hat to match. Remember rapping to Da Ha, Da Ha. Never thought that hip hop would take it this far. Now I'm in the limelight, cause I rhyme tight. Time to get paid, blow up like the World Trade. Born sinner, the opposite of a winner. Remember when I used to eat sardines for dinner? I'm blowing up like you thought I would. Call the crib, same number, same hood. It's all good. And if you don't know, now you know.
You know very well. broke man, I couldn't picture this. 50-inch screen and a green leather sofa. Got two rides, a limousine with the chauffeur. Phone bill about 2 G's flat. No need to worry, my accountant handles that. And my whole crew is lounging, celebrating every day, no more public housing. Thinking back on my one room shack. Now my mom pimps her at what makes in her back. And she loves to show me off, of course. Smiles every time my face is up in the sauce. We used to fuss when the landlord dissed us. No heat, wonder why Christmas missed us. Birthdays was the worst day. Now we sip champagne when we're thirsty. Damn right, I love the life I live. Cause I went from negative to positive. And if you don't know, now you know. You know very well who you are. Don't let them hold you down. Reach for the stars. You had it going, but not that many.
I'm Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. My guest this week is the composer, vocalist, and multi-instrumentalist, Emily Wells. We've been discussing her time growing up in Indianapolis during the 1990s. For the remainder of this week's show, we'll be focusing on Emily Wells' new album, Regards to the End. Let's return to our conversation. Emily, we're going to listen to a few songs off your latest project, an album titled Regards to the End. And this is a really beautiful and powerful album. And many of the songs on Regards to the End speak about the AIDS crisis, and perhaps more specifically, the impact of the AIDS crisis on the art scene in New York during the late 20th century. Can you tell us about this record and, you know, how this became sort of a theme for this project?
Yeah, absolutely. So I, you know, in a way, I feel like the people who were working and making art and being activists and writing and dealing directly with the AIDS crisis are my, you know, forefathers, in, you know, in a lot of ways. You know, being a queer kid, being an artist alive right now in the wake of that crisis, in the wake of all the work that came from that time. And yeah, so the other thing that I've been thinking about so much, as so many of us are, is climate crisis. And I started to feel like there must be something we could learn from the activists and the thinkers who were around at the beginning of the AIDS crisis. And so that was kind of the question that sparked this album before I knew what it was going to be, before I knew what any of the songs were going to be, before I even understood its scope. And, you know, this was pre-pandemic. This was had nothing to do with COVID or any of that. You know, I didn't know that was to come. And in a way, the impact of the pandemic was that and perhaps it would happen anyway, but like thinking in like clinical terms, just felt really overwhelming. Like I didn't totally know how to answer that question on like a practical level. So I just started like devouring the work that people were making during that time. And they ended up, a lot of them, yeah, like you're saying, being part of that, the ACT UP in New York scene. David Wondorovich was a huge influence on the record, and the dancer Bill T. Jones, Kiki Smith, like Jenny Holzer, like just this incredible cohort of people, many of them who knew one another and collaborated or were friends, you know. And I think in a way they kind of kept me company during that year and a half or so of isolation when I was writing the album. And so a lot of the lessons that I learned were about art making and like all the hope that exists in making, you know. So it's not like, you know, the songs themselves are their responses in a way to the work that I was encountering and living with during that time, if that makes sense, you know.
Yeah. And Emily, you mentioned David Wondorovich, and I'm going to share the song David's Got a Problem next, which I understand was inspired by David Wondorovich. Is there anything you want to say about his work or this song before we listen?
Oh, yeah. I wrote this song. I was on tour in Belgium and being hosted in this beautiful, strange, ancient apartment that spans like three stories. And on the outside, there's a gigantic Gothic church staring in through all the windows. And I had read a passage in a book by Olivia Lang about David Wondorovich, talking about how he would throw grass seed out at the piers. The piers are this place in New York where people were making art and cruising. And so he would throw this grass out, and it was just a very like ephemeral work of art in a way, this living thing inside of this like dilapidated old pier, sort of falling down around its inhabitants. And yeah, so I read this part of this book and immediately wrote this song.
Off her new album, Regards to the End, this is Emily Wells with David's Got a Problem.
Then go.
Emily, we just heard the song David's Got a Problem off your latest project, Regards to the End. And I want to share another song from that record now. We're going to listen to The Dress Rehearsal. And in the press release for the record, it describes this song as addressing the notion that the COVID-19 pandemic is a dress rehearsal for the horrors of climate change. And yeah, I wanted to give you an opportunity to speak about that and, you know, share the ideas in this song with us.
Yeah. God, when you put it like that, it really does. It hurts. Oh, man. I was walking in the woods every day during this period when I wrote this song. And it was early spring, and I felt so much. The only thing really that really helped me in that time was watching the trees come back to life and the forest just slowly start to be, you know, alive. And I felt all this enormous trust in the earth and the natural world. And yeah, but of course I also was thinking a lot about the way that human beings were responding to the pandemic, and wondered if maybe we might be able to take something from this to that, to the an inevitable future that that, you know, climate crisis is bringing to bear. And yeah, so that's in many ways where this is born from. It there was this fox that I would always see, and I felt like the fox knew how to be an animal, you know, and I really wanted to know how to be an animal, you know.
This is Emily Wells with The Dress Rehearsal.
Yeah.
I'm Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. We just heard Emily Wells with The Dress Rehearsal. And Emily Wells is my guest this week. Let's return to our conversation. And Emily, we've been listening to tracks off your new album, Regards to the End. And again, this is a really powerful and beautiful record, so congratulations on this incredible project.
Thank you so much.
And if our listeners want to learn more about this record and your past work, they can go to emilywells.com. And yeah, I just, as we close out, just wanted to give you a chance. Is there to give any final thoughts to our listeners here in Indiana that you'd like to share?
Oh, just, you know, thank you for sheltering me in my formative years. And yeah, it was a good place. Good to me.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Emily, for taking time to speak with me today. We're going to end with the final song off Regards to the End, Blood Brother. Anything you want to say before we cue this song up?
I'll let the song speak for itself. Yeah.
Thank you, Emily, for taking time to speak with me today. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Kyle.
That's all the time we have for this week. Thank you for tuning in. And thank you to my guest, Emily Wells. I'm Kyle Long, and you've been listening to Cultural Manifesto.